Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
Researchers say that women in sub-Saharan Africa lead the world in the rates of female entrepreneurship. They say that in the past year alone, over 160 million women worldwide started a business venture, with the majority of these women living in Africa. From running a market stall in Monrovia to operating an airline in South Africa, women often become entrepreneurs out of necessity to support their families and, by extension, playing a double role as drivers of economic growth and social progress. But even as we continue to see an increase in the numbers of female entrepreneurs, there is one sector in which those numbers are still considerably low. That is the technology sector. Studies from organizations like UNESCO show that female representation in the technology startup ecosystem in Africa is one of the lowest in the world. Young female entrepreneurs like Hannah Bezard have to contend with social and cultural barriers, even as they operate in some of the most progressive African societies.
You get me started on challenges. I'm not sure we'll be that short. But yeah, there were many challenges. I suppose there were challenges just for setting up a business in Morocco as an entrepreneur, and not even talking about female entrepreneur. So I feel like the public institutions could do a better job in attracting people that really want to invest in this country and retaining them, making it easy. It was quite a struggle to just change my appointment, to set up my company, have my papers on time, to go to France, sign my franchise contract, things like this that shouldn't be a problem.
Hannah is founder and CEO of Lovega in Casablanca, part of a worldwide network of coding schools and tech hubs. She returned home to Morocco after education in France and the U.S. to open Lovega's first African campus.
What can you tell us about your city here? What are we looking at?
My new city, I have to say. I'm from Rabat. Yeah. Well, welcome to Casablanca, the biggest metropolis in Morocco. One of the most attractive ones in Africa, I'd say. Right in front of you, you have Hassan II Mosque. It is one of the biggest mosques in the Muslim world. We're here in the marina. It's a beautiful space. We have our campus here. There's also another business school campus.
Moroccan tech startups raised over $4 million in financing in 2017. This is one of the factors that is attracting young African entrepreneurs to leave more robust startup ecosystems in places like the Silicon Valley and move back home. They don't want to miss out on the change that is taking place across the continent.
It was time that I befriend again my own country on my own terms, that I carve my way out. It would make sense for me, it would make sense for a lot of people. And so it's been a year now that I set up this coding school, that I launched Duartech as a prototype, that I'm also carving my way out as an independent female entrepreneur in Morocco. And I have to say, it's thrilling. I love it. It's been a lot of challenges. It's been a huge learning curve on so many ways, on obviously entrepreneurship, but also doing business in Morocco. I understood how to work with a lot of different people that did not necessarily have the same standards or same vision, but also kind of like share a certain ambition and a vision. And so far, so good. Everything is on the right track.
Starting and running a business is not an easy task. And that task gets harder if you're a woman operating in more traditional societies like the Maghreb. Hannah can already relate.
It was tough for me to understand this. It was even tougher to explain this to my colleagues because they're from another background. They don't get it, that female leadership is very new, but it's even newer here, and a lot of people are actually sabotaging it. So when they see me, young, ambitious, sometimes it gets some resistance reactions that are very tough. I had the chance to welcome one of those entrepreneurs I really want to have more of. She created an application to address the need for remote follow-up for cancer patients. And in a country like Morocco, where only a few cities like Rabat, Casablanca, Marrakech are in the proper standards of having medical infrastructure, it is key to have tech and web products addressing such challenges. So this is the type of projects I want to encourage: medtech, edtech, or any sort of other tech, but that is relevant to what we are facing here.
Studies show that on average, women-led businesses are better performers in terms of their return on profit. Women are also more likely to reinvest their profits back into their community. Hannah hopes that as African economies start to rely more on innovation, those two factors will start to appeal to financial institutions, especially those that are still hesitant to grant business loans to female entrepreneurs.
I do feel that Morocco could do so much better given our potential. I feel that like it's a mindset challenge more than anything. There is money in this country. There are talents in this country. However, people are still very risk adverse, and so they wouldn't want to invest so much in tech. And sometimes when they do, they're not that ambitious. They only do copycat web products. And I feel like sometimes they need to be hit by something bigger than this. I went to other countries in Africa, and I was so inspired by the narratives they're writing right now. In so many ways, we're more advanced because we have more infrastructure. But here, there's a hunger we need to awaken. Not everyone is too comfortable in this country, but a lot of people that could do a lot of things are indeed too comfortable.
Hello, I'm Richard Mason Smolki from Nigeria, Calabar State, Biambu, Federal Local Government. I'm enjoying your program. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Liz Kemigisha from Kampala, Uganda, and I love listening to Upfront.
A woman entrepreneur who inspires me a lot is founder of the Malawi First Technology Hub, known as the M-Hub. I'm impressed with this woman because she's just a girl. She's young and courageous. For example, she achieved a lot at her young age. For example, in 2016, she was among the 30 promising entrepreneurs in Africa.
A woman who inspired me a lot is our former head of state, Madam Joyce Banda. Being a former head of state here in Malawi, she has done so many great things being an entrepreneur. In a way that, as I'm saying now, she has a school, Joyce Banda Foundation. And having this school, she has tried to employ some teachers there, not even teachers, talking of accountants, and so doing, reducing the rate of unemployment here in Malawi.
I'm an entrepreneur who does agribusiness. An example is Grace Nhangu. She grows crops including maize, tobacco, and legumes. Grace inspires me in the way that being a woman, she is strong, hardworking, and result-oriented.
Women entrepreneurs that inspires me are those that are in agri-business. They inspire me because they feed the nation and it's a profitable business because every day people would want to eat. So venturing into agri-business is a very good investment. We are assured of availability of market.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We are talking about female entrepreneurship on the continent. And the last time we spoke to our next guest, she was about to embark to start on a journey across Africa on a storytelling project that would take her across the continent of Africa, where she would meet and capture the unique stories of Africa's female entrepreneurs. Jacqueline Sibanda, who has worked as an international development professional, felt that the story of the African female entrepreneur is not adequately covered in mainstream media. And, you know, you can check out our interview with her. We covered her story a couple of, sometime last year, around September last year. We have that on podcast. You can visit our show page on voanews.com. So Jacqueline is currently in Ivory Coast's capital, Abidjan, where I caught up with her.
So, Jacqueline, the last time we spoke, you were embarking on quite an ambitious project to capture and document stories of African female entrepreneurs. How did that go? Can you bring us up to speed?
Yeah, Jacqueline, thank you for following up. The adventure took a bit of a left turn and somehow helped me get from the U.S., where I was based in Washington, to Abidjan in the Ivory Coast in Côte d'Ivoire. In an institution that also happens to be home to an African women entrepreneurship program. So I'm getting closer to my dream of capturing a lot of these stories, one woman at a time.
So right now, as we speak, you're in Abidjan. I think part of the reason why we can't hear you properly is that you're outside places, windy. How is Abidjan treating you so far, aside from the wind?
I love Abidjan. I wish my French would catch up with my enthusiasm for Abidjan. But I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I've only ever visited African cities that I'm familiar with. So in Bulawayo or Harare in Zimbabwe, Johannesburg, also in Southern Africa. So I had never ventured out beyond the South, where I have family and friends and where it feels familiar. And I've been incredibly surprised, incredibly inspired, and especially because I see a lot of women's entrepreneurship in real life in Abidjan. They are making clothing, they are tailors, making clothing, marketing, and delivering really, you know, quite high quality goods. But I guess not at volume, because you know, sometimes this is work that's done in the home. So on a small scale, just looking at the quality of the work, there's absolutely a massive market and such, you know, big potential. It would be amazing if these women had access to a global market or even a regional market beyond Ivory Coast or even West Africa. So I'm definitely seeing my obsession with African women's entrepreneurship totally just.
And I remember when we were talking about your mission, when you were setting out to start this podcast series, capturing women's stories of entrepreneurs in Africa, you wanted to capture even the woman on the street corner selling bananas or tomatoes, because that's a story of entrepreneurship in itself. But I wanted to say real quick that it's amazing how you're in Abidjan, a French-speaking city, and you don't even speak French. That says something about the city itself, doesn't it?
It says a lot about the city. People are bilingual. But also, I think what I've discovered is even if you're not speaking the same language, you find a way to communicate. My French is really bad. I studied in high school. I won't say years ago. That would betray my age.
You can order something off a menu. You won't go hungry.
You can point at something, but also you can negotiate. And what I'm discovering is that the human experience is just that, the human experience. And we don't have to say the same words in the same language. There are other means of communicating, but it's willingness to have the conversation. And so for me, it was a major leap of faith. Taking an opportunity in Abidjan, in a country, as you say, where I'm not super familiar with the language. One, I'm learning that a lot of Africans, you know, even beyond Abidjan, I've traveled to a few other countries since I've been here, speak English. You know, they know how to operate in English because I guess they do business tourism when people visit their countries and they have goods and products and services to offer. Find a way to communicate that.
You were in Rwanda a while ago attending a tech conference, if I can remember. Is that correct?
I was attending the Africa Tech Summit.
Yes. Oh, great. So my memory serves me right. Now, it has been said that even though women are dominating in most sectors as entrepreneurs, that they are still falling behind when it comes to the tech sector. How do we explain that, and what can be changed based on some of the female techpreneurs you've met along the way?
I think a lot of it is representation, right? If you don't see other women or other people that look like you in a certain space, you know, even without deliberately thinking so, you probably tell yourself, this is not the space for me. But even with tech, if you recall, the entrepreneur that I interviewed in Rwanda is using an app to drive her healthy food business. And in fact, I'll be heading back to Rwanda in a few weeks' time. And I'm hoping to catch up with her to see where the business is now. At the time that I met her, she was already employing 6 people, 3 to prepare the fresh salads and soups for delivery, and then another 3 to actually make the deliveries of orders that came in through the app. So she was already building a very nice, very effective ecosystem for delivering her business. My assumption now that her business would have grown, so I'm really excited to catch up with Pearl in a couple of weeks' time to see where she is with the business and how many people she's employing now, but also how her customer base has grown.
Hmm.
And possibly even inspired other people.
That is Jacqueline Sibanda. Jacqueline is an international development professional, also a storyteller, and she's currently on a mission to capture the stories of 55 African female entrepreneurs.
Of today are struggling, but I think you wouldn't compare their struggles to those of the past. I would say technology has exposed the world to so many things. Let's just look at education. For a woman to make it even in university, she needs a lot of effort.
Those were some of the voices of young people across the continent contributing their opinion to this topic. We'd love to hear from you. You can always connect with us on our social media platforms. I am at Upfront Africa. That's my Twitter and Instagram handle. If you want to join and connect with our family on Facebook, type in Upfront Show. You will see our page. Like it, subscribe. Share, tell somebody about it, share it with your friend, but most importantly, send me a message, leave a message and say, hey, you know, my name is so-and-so, I'm listening in from, you know, wherever you are, whether you are in Juba, whether you're in Accra, Ghana, whether you're in Soweto. We have listeners all over the continent, and we do appreciate your listeners taking time to listen to our show and giving us feedback. Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganya. So a recent event in Accra, Ghana, brought together African women who work in technology for the annual Women in Tech Africa Week. Stacey Knott reports from Accra, Ghana, that the organizers want to bring more women into the tech space and work towards combating inequalities in technology use and access, especially when it comes to economic development. Let's listen to her report.
Francesca Opoko remembers having to physically send workers to pass on messages or documents when she started her small social enterprise in Ghana 10 years ago. Today, she works to keep up with fast-developing technology to grow her social enterprise that produces natural beauty products. She also trains women she works with in financial literacy, such as using simple mobile technology to manage their money.
As a small African business, as you're growing and as you aspire to grow global and your tentacles are kind of like widening, the world is just going techie. Business in the world is going techie, and especially it's especially relevant for a small business. It's the best way you can make what you're doing known out there.
She was at the launch of the Women in Tech Africa Week in Accra, with other events in 6 other countries, including Germany, Kenya, and Zimbabwe. Opoko said she wanted to learn more about how she can keep using technology to make her business grow and to ensure she is not left behind in the technology divide. Across Africa, this divide means women are 13% less likely to own a mobile phone and 41% less likely to use mobile internet than men. Ethel Kofi, founder of Women in Tech Africa, an NGO that started in 2015, said addressing this gap was crucial. Her network of 5,000 women across 30 African countries is pushing the conversation about women in technology and leadership.
There is a huge gender gap And that's part of the conversation, right? So when we are out here showing the world that we actually exist and we're doing things, what it does is it provides avenues for us to support other women. So what one of the things Women in Tech has done is we've worked with like the Ghana Beauticians Association, the Ghana Traders Association, because even though these women are not necessarily as educated, they still need to be able to use tech to build their businesses.
Kofi says this digital gap between men and women in Africa is a consequence of poverty and economic disparities. Men usually have higher incomes, better access to mobile phones and internet data. Increasing digital access starts with education. At the G7 summit this year, members pledged to work with developing countries to promote inclusion, equity and access for girls and women to quality education, including access to science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Faiza Adam, a network engineer, started Girly Tech this year to inspire underprivileged Ghanaian girls into STEM careers. She's training young girls in web development, programming, and robotics in Accra. For her, this empowers girls into STEM careers, which will lead to better solutions to problems.
Imagine where girls don't embrace technology and then in 5 years to come, we have only males who are in the tech space. There is no diversity. So in decision making, they kind of tend to use the male ideas instead of female. So when we have inclusion or if there is diversity, I bring my idea. The guy also brings his idea from the male perspective. We come together and then solve societal problems.
Kofi and Adam both say more women in tech will mean more problems solved in their own communities. But Kofi adds that half the battles could be overcome, like the gender divide, with the right policies in place. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
Thank you, Stacey. That was Stacey Knott reporting from Accra, Ghana. Now let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Connect with me at Upfront Africa. That's my Twitter handle and Instagram. Check us out on Facebook at Upfront Show. Now, studies show that even though female entrepreneurs are as efficient and profitable as their male counterparts, the studies say that their businesses often run into all kinds of barriers, whether they are institutional barriers, whether they are social-cultural barriers. You know, women have often have to contend with all these kinds of obstacles that impede their success. My colleague, Orianne Itangishaka, is the co-host of Our Voices, a show here on The Voice of America. Itangishaka just came back from Uganda and Kenya, where she met up with female entrepreneurs in cities like Kampala. She joins me on the show to talk about her trip and the stories she had from these hardworking women in East Africa.
First of all, welcome back to the show. We haven't been able to reconnect after almost a year, over a year now.
That's right.
It's good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
You just came back from a trip in East Africa. You were in Uganda. You were also in Kenya.
Correct. I spoke to many women, and those facts are true simply because when you look at the marketplace in Africa, women are the ones that are like the most owners of stands. Mm. When you look at...
They're more visible.
Mm. And so I think those stats are precise. Mm. I met many of them in the marketplace, in the city districts, centers.
When we think about entrepreneurship in general, in the modern sense, we always think about people in the offices, leading corporations and companies and organizations. What kind of entrepreneurs did you meet?
I met what people would call small entrepreneurs, but they aren't small because what they're pioneering is out of nothing and from very small capital. And so I met women, very young women, 21, 22-year-olds who are pioneer in, like, let's say, production of lotions and cocoa butters and things that are very raw material, transforming them into something great that can be even sold overseas.
Right.
And so one of the women that I met, she's right now producing a very good lotion, organic lotion from shea butter. It's really, I'm using it even myself. And
using local products, local material.
Exactly.
Adding value to it.
Straight from the village, the whole streamline the whole chain. She oversees it.
The supply chain from the gardens where it's being grown all the way to the factory.
To the production, right. And now she's trying to go into the international market, which is very impressive. So I think that African women have that zeal and that drive to be able to grow from the very bottom chain of, you know, not having any finances, but seeing the challenge and going forward.
Now you, that seems to me, as a person who obviously is not the same as a young lady running a tomato stall in Kampala, you know, Wino Market. But they do have some certain linkages. What kind of struggles or challenges do African female entrepreneurs face?
It's always the same. They're not quote-unquote bankable because they don't have a history of financial track. So the banks aren't able to give them the finances that they need to start. Sometimes it's either their husbands or their brothers or somebody who help them to begin, because, you know, we know that they are seen as caretakers, but when they are trusted financially and given the financial freedom, they really soar. So I think that
access to finance is
the bigger problem. And of course, culture, to be able to quote-unquote allow her to have her business is also something they see as a challenge. Because I mean, some of them told me that their husband, once they saw that they were making money, it became a stress in the family of...
Who's bringing the money? Who's bringing the bread?
Not only that, whenever she said something, it was like, oh, now you make the money, you can make the rules kind of thing. So culture could also be an impediment.
So they want to start business and grow their business, but they have also these structural and cultural issues that hold them back.
The patriotic society is still a struggle.
But they still persevere.
Yes, they still persevere for sure. They still persevere because they feel, you know what, if many of them I spoke to were single mothers, and they say, you know what, if I don't do it, my children won't be able to go to school and have a better future. And some of them are going to another level. They're saying, look, my community needs me, because when I bring in the finances, I'm not only feeding my own family, but I'm giving the neighbor a loan and I'm helping so-and-so, so-and-so. And so they're looking at it as a broad thing. And so that's what really inspired me about women on the continent
and
what they're doing.
That's interesting. Tangi Shaka, one of the co-hosts of Our Voices on The Voice of America. When should we expect some of these stories? You're working on post-production right now?
That's right. I'm actually working on a story I did with the market women in Uganda in a market called Kalerwe Market. And so that's coming out within the next 2 weeks.
I happen to know that market.
Big market.
That's very interesting.
Women there are like, they have a lot of zeal. I spoke to tomato sales, banana sales. I mean, they're just like happy about what they're doing and they're happy to take their finances and use it for greater good for their families.
Are these the kind of entrepreneurs that you feel that if you were to inject capital in them, that they would be able to scale?
Definitely, definitely, because they're the ones whom I see are driving the country's economies. The country's economies depend on them. And when men are doing other things and women are doing the market, they're running the market capital and the market finances, it's going into the realm of the IRS is in our countries, if I can call it IRS, the revenue.
The revenue authorities.
The revenue authorities, when they collect money from those markets, they can see that finance,
the women power of women.
Exactly.
So women are the economic engines.
Undocumented.
Undocumented economic engines of these economies.
Yeah, and that's how I saw it, yeah.
Tangi Shaka, we look forward to the series that you're producing. You can watch the show on our website, voanews.com. Tangi Shaka, can you plug your...
For sure. You can also find us on social media at VOA, Our Voices, social media... Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Definitely subscribe, share with your friends.
That's right. We were recently on the road tour to West Africa and East Africa. You see a lot of things we covered, a lot of places we went, what we saw, who we spoke with. You know, you see a lot of things.
We look forward to that.
Thank you so much,
Tangi Shaka.
Appreciate it.
All right.
And on that note, we come to the end of the show today. Thank you very much for joining us. If you have any questions, comments, if you want to contribute to the show, our email is upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @upfrontafrica. You can also follow our social media pages on Facebook, SoundCloud, YouTube, among others. We'll catch you next time, same time, right here on The Voice of America. Goodbye. Taking a hold on me. I need a one
dance. This is VOA News.